An important lesson in life. There's a lot of things that are on your way, but don't get you there any faster. It's on the way.
Especially
with the buses and all. Good to know.
Nonsense
up there. Quick question. I know you already covered it. Why do they pair a zonah to a gerusa? What's the reason that a kohen can't marry a gerusa?
A divorcee is seen as being a tragedy. Woman who has. It's not a
but
nice,
a
healthy.
Isn't a tragedy?
No, widow's a good thing. Comparatively speaking. The Torah, the Mishnah, whenever it wants to talk about a din that applies to a woman who was once married, it always takes an almana instead of a grusha. Because that's considered, happier. As opposed to a divorce, where divorce is always ugly and there's always something bad there and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where there's a certain stigma associated with it. Anyway.
You said yesterday that about Mum, that the guy labeled himself a Baal Mum, that's why he sees everything negative. But the Torah also calls him a Baal Mum. He is a Baal Mum.
Yeah, Ifa Ketuv.
He is a Baal Mum, that's why he can't work. So the fact that he has a feeling, he is a Baal Mum, he is different.
No, you see, but it's a question of how you perceive yourself. The Torah doesn't call him a Baal Mum. The Torah calls him Ben Isha Yisraelis. He is the son of a Jewish woman. The who Ben Ish Mitzri?
No, but a regular kind, he can't do that because he is a Baal Mum.
Right, so you have to, right, so you describe it as a Baal Mum. So, therefore, the question is, I may not be able to do something because I have a Mum. Now, how do I view myself based on that? Now that, okay, I accept the fact that I'm a Baal Mum. Now, does that mean that I, let me take that back. I'm a person who has a Mum. Is my self awareness based on the fact that I'm a Baal Mum? That's where you get into trouble. The fact that I'm a Baal Mum, there's no denying the fact that I'm missing an arm. The question is, how do I view myself because of that? Perception that you associate with that, and that's why people who associate themselves with that they're Baal Mum, that's the difficulty. Alright, in this week's Parsha, since we're not going to be here on Sunday, in this week's Parsha we have the din of spiritual labor that you're supposed to count 7 weeks from Pesach to Shavuos. What is the purpose of counting the 7 weeks? The purpose of counting the 7 weeks is to prepare ourselves for Shavuos, to raise ourselves up to the level where we can receive the Torah. And I have a lot to say on Shavuos and on the Omer. I don't know if I'm going to get to it. Let me rephrase that. I'm not going to get to it today. So let me instead turn to one particular aspect of the Omer, one that's coming up very shortly. How many people have ever been here in Israel for Lag BaOmer? How many people is this your first Lag BaOmer in Israel? Okay. So I want to try to put this into perspective. How many people when they were in America celebrated Lag BaOmer?
Me setting things on fire?
By doing anything. Yeah. Yeah. What'd you do?
I went to a fire.
And where?
So it burned.
Where?
In Flatbush. And I heard a really bad band play.
Where was there a fire?
They closed off the corner. They pulled the bonfire.
How big was it?
I didn't really see it because I came after they put out the fire.
Oh. That must have been a moving experience. Yeah. When I went to day school, Lag BaOmer, we used to take off the day and go to the park.
Carnival.
It was a sports day. Someplace they have a carnival. We used to have a sports day. This is based on the fact that some people used to shoot bows and arrows.
We had a contest.
The reason I was given as a kid was because of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. I'm not sure exactly how that tied in, but somehow that was associated with Lag BaOmer. But we went to the park. We had a sports day. I lived out in Long Island, Nassau County. And we didn't make a bonfire because it was illegal. you could, if you got enough permits, arrange to have a fire made by fire-making professionals who would then come down and make a fire for you. For insurance reasons, no one under 18 was actually allowed within 300 feet of the fire. But from a distance, you could watch it, see a little bit, you know, and microwave your hot dogs, put them on a stick and point it in the general direction of the fire, you know. And, you know, that was sort of Lag BaOmer. It was about as far as it went, you know. And I came to Israel the first time. And Lag BaOmer was coming, and I sensed Lag BaOmer was coming, because I couldn't really relate to it, because, again, we never really had fires when I was growing up. But as I would drive through the streets of my little neighborhood of Har Nof, I started noticing that people were erecting these funeral pyres upon which they would burn a Greek god in ancient times. This was not a bonfire. A bonfire is a cute little thing with some pieces of wood. I remember seeing it in camp. But this was like 40 feet in the sky. Nobody ever made a bonfire that big. And you see, they started making it with, like, you know, pieces of wood, and then entire tree trunks, and then like couches, doors, homes, all assembled. And the most frightening aspect of it is that everybody who's doing it is under the age of 5. You know, someone just told me recently, you know, these like 5-year-olds, you know, tied this rope around and they're dragging this tree down across the street. You know what I mean? You know, set it up.
They didn't have a rope. They had a big, it was just a big thing of plastic.
Yeah. And you wonder, gee, this certainly looks strange. What are they going to do with all this? Right? Now, of course, I was a newcomer to Israel. As nightfall begins to approach, the Vatikim, those who are real Israelis, immediately start snapping into action. First thing they do is take all the clothing off of the lines that have been drying. Then they close the windows and close the trisim, even though it's 104 degrees outside. They're closing all the windows in the trisim, and all the adults hide under the bed. Because at sundown begins a horror movie called The Night of the Burning Children. And sure enough, suddenly bands of these 5-year-olds are running around with torches, soot on their faces, and setting these giant conflagrations up into fire. You know, one of the 4-year-olds has a big bucket of gasoline that he's throwing on. A 2-year-old has some benzene he's spraying. You know what I mean? And the flames are dancing and jumping and carrying on, you know? And it's just absolutely frightening. The whole country is like on fire, you know? And there's no adults around. They're all hiding, you know? Until the next morning, when, like, you know, those movies with the, after the nuclear war, you know, the survivors come out and try to rebuild the world, you know. The entire country has a pail of smoke hanging above it, you know. Everything is covered in ash, you know. And you go out to survey the damage, you know. Oh, no, they got my car, you know. And it's bizarre, but bizarre. You know, I live on one side on Zerach Banet. I'm looking down. There's a fire on breaking on Bran. So I'm making this fire, and suddenly the flames whoosh up onto Scholzen, like, you know, instead of destroying things on the next street up, you know. The flames are burning out of control. I once lived in a yeshiva in Givat Shol. You know, we didn't have electricity for 4 days. They burnt down the electrical wires, you know. It's dangerous. It's not within the realm of normal. This is not normal. Right? Now, what's the deep religious significance of this? Yeah. So, the simplest explanation is that since Judaism has many rules, so there are those who theorize that God tries to build into it a certain, you know, release valve, so that, you know, everybody who has some sort of bizarre and unhealthy behavior should have one day dedicated to them. So if you're an alcoholic, you've got Purim. If you're an obsessive clean freak, you've got Pesach. And if you're a fresh air fiend, you've got Sukkot. And if you're a pyromaniac, you have Lag BaOmer. So this is a chance for all bizarre behavior to express itself. Obviously, it has something to do with Bar Yochai, with Shimon Bar Yochai. We know this because that's the only thing that even borders on some sort of a ritual, and that is a few adults who may have braved the flames. You know, they're sitting there singing Bar Yochai, a beautiful mystical song to which nobody knows the words. One guy has the words, and he's trying to spit out these Aramaic words. But basically, the tune goes like this. Bar Yochai, la 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la. Bar Yochai, la 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la. Bar Yochai, and it goes on like that. You know, one person has a sitter, but it's not a good idea because one of the kids throws it in the fire. Anyway. Printed on asbestos. Anyway, so obviously Shimon Bar Yochai has something to do with it. We know there are those who say that Lag BaOmer was a happy day because the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. We knew that Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students. They died during a 33-day period, and they stopped dying on Lag BaOmer. This is what they teach you also in the grade school. My son came home once from Cheder, gone. He was about 4 years old, 5 years old. And I said, so, what did you learn? He said, we learned about Lag BaOmer. I said, what did you learn? I said, Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim stopped dying. He said, that's very good. He says, but Abba, they were all dead. If there were 24,000 Talmidim and they die in 33 days, then of course in the 33rd day they stop dying. They're all dead. That's like a guy who invests $24,000 in the stock market. He loses $1,000 every day. And on the 24th day, he makes a party because he didn't lose any more money. That doesn't seem very happy to me. There's another strange thing about the Omer, and that is, of course, that some people observe the 33 days of mourning, the first 33, the last 33, or the middle 33. Don't we know when they died? We're so good with every historical event, and suddenly the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva dying, we have no idea when it took place. Strange, eh? So the Maharil perhaps answers both of these questions. The Maharil says, it doesn't say that they died during the first 33 days of the Omer, because then there wouldn't have been anything to talk about. It says they died for 33 days between Pesach and Shavuos. Which means, if we take out of those 49 days, Pesach, Pesach Sheni, Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos, then you're left with, of those 33 days, 15 days that they didn't die. But they didn't die for 16 of those days, which means there's another day they didn't die. Lag BaOmer, they didn't die. But Lag BaOmer is not a happy day because they didn't die, but they didn't die on Lag BaOmer because Lag BaOmer was a happy day. We just didn't know it till then. So what's so happy about Lag BaOmer? Where is the happiness of Lag BaOmer? So the Pri Chadosh asks the question slightly different. He says, you know what? They stopped dying. So what? They all died anyway. Again, it's like somebody's in the hospital and he's deathly ill and his condition's deteriorating. One day he says, you know, I'm feeling much better. The next day he dies. You don't make a kiddush for the day that he felt better. Because he died anyway. You know what I mean? So right after Shiva, I make a kiddush. Why? Well, the Tuesday before he died, he felt better. You know what I'm saying? That's not how we make a party. You know what I mean? So he says, what is so happy about Lag BaOmer? He died anyway. So he says, maybe it's for the next 5 Talmidim. Which is kind of strange. There's no evidence that he got them on Lag BaOmer. Yeah. So we also know, it's brought down, that this is the Yorid Sa'idim of Shimon Bar Yochai, who died on this day, and he says, don't mourn, it's a happy day. Shimon Bar Yochai, who his whole life is trying to bring down the light, the Zohar, the hidden light of Torah, finally on his death managed to bring it down as he died. See? The light, that's what all the fires are about, is the light. Okay, so what has all this got to do? What's the happiness of Lag BaOmer? Let's try to understand. But are those who say it is the power of the hidden Torah, and they learn the hidden Torah on Lag BaOmer, that it's revealed. But let's try to put it into a perspective. Maybe we can understand him. To understand this, we have to get ourselves an understanding of the life of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was 40 years old. He was an ignorant shepherd, which often tends to be the case. I bet very few of you, when sitting down with your high school or college guidance counselors, were ever suggested shepherding as a possible career. You understand? Shepherding doesn't seem to attract the intellectual elite, the best and the brightest of society. Yeah, but many shepherds tend to be poorly educated. And Rabbi Akiva, or Akiva at the time, was poorly educated. He worked for someone by the name of Kalba Savua. And his daughter, he had a daughter, Rachel, who was beautiful, who was intelligent, was deeply pious. And she saw something special in Rabbi Akiva. And she says to him, Akiva, says, I'd like to marry you. And he says, well, that's pretty funny, you know. You're a cute kid, you know, you're beautiful, you're rich. You know, your father's one of the richest people around. You know, you're really, you know, in line for a palashidduch. I'm a 40-year-old shepherd. I'm kind of ignorant. You know, I haven't got much to recommend me. You know, I don't know why. I just feel like your dad's not going to go for it. Hey, call me crazy. So he says, you know what, Akiva, don't worry about it. You know, if you want it, I'll get you married. I'm going to marry you. He says, I got to think about this. She says, what, you got a better offer? He says, no, this is the best offer I've had today. Don't get me wrong. I want time to think about this. Because she said, there's one condition. I'll marry you on condition that you go off to study Torah.
What she's seen in that she...
What she saw in him is what we're doing. Those of you who come to the Sunday, Tuesday class at 12:30, what she saw in him were Midos Tovos. And since during these weeks we're supposed to be preparing ourselves to receive the Torah, because Derech Eretz Kadmon LaTorah, she saw he had outstanding midos. That's what she saw. So, she wants to go off and learn Torah. I'm 40 years old. There was no Or Sameach back then, you know what I mean? It means you go to, you know, you sit down with the three-year-olds and learn Aleph Beis, you know, Abba, Gada, Hava, Zacha, Taya, right? Or E-A-O-R-E-E-O, Baby, Ba, 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 Blue Moon. Anyway, so this is what he's got in line. It doesn't sound too exciting. So he says, how am I going to learn Torah? I'm so old, I'm so dumb, it's not going to happen. And he goes and he sees in a cave a rock. And in the rock, he sees there's a hole. And he sees there's a little dripping of water. And he says, my goodness, the little drops of water must have worn away the rock. And if little drops of water can wear away a hole in a rock, then I bet you the words of Torah, which are compared to water, can make a hole in my heart head. So he says, okay, Rachel, I accept. So he goes to her father, and she says, Father, I've decided I'm getting married. And he says, isn't that cute? You sense that he's not taking her too seriously. Look, it says bumper sticker. You're a feminist. Isn't that cute? Anyway, not being taken too seriously, yeah? So he says, oh yeah, who are you marrying? He says, Akiva. He says, Akiva, I'm not familiar with Akiva. You know, the 40-year-old ignorant shepherd? He goes, oh, that's funny. Anyway, honey, you know, you'll be starting Shidduchim soon. You know, he says, no, I'm marrying Akiva. He says, no, you're not. He says, yes, I am. He says, sweetheart, let me put this into terms you can understand, okay? You go, you're getting plastic surgery. I'm cutting up your credit cards. You understand? You know, I'm taking them away, you know, I'm taking away your money. I'm taking away, you're going to be penniless. She says, that's all right. He says, what do you mean that's all right? You're a rich girl, you're a rich family. How are you going to live? What are you going to live on? You have no profession. She says, I'll sell my hair. He says, you know, that's not like a steady income. You know what I mean? You know, you sell your hair, like that's it for 6 months. You know what I mean? She says, I don't care. You know, whatever it is, I believe in Akiva. She says, oh, that's it. You're not my daughter. You know, I'm Akinezi. You have no benefit from me. Fine. Akiva goes off to learn for 12 years. And at the end of those 12 years, he has 12,000 students. He comes back at the end of those 12 years. And he's now a Talmud Chacham. And as he's passing by the window of his house, he hears a neighbor saying to his wife, you married this creep, Akiva. Oh my gosh, I understand if he was a shepherd, at least he'd bring in some income. He runs off, he leaves you here. You have nothing, you have no money. You understand? You know, you're living on your hair. You know what I mean? Like, this is no way to live, you know? You know, what a creep. And she says, if he was standing here right now, I'd tell him to go back for another 12. Okay then? Turns around. Doesn't even stop in for a cup of coffee. Why? The simple answer is, because she had no food. But the better answer is, because... this is an important idea. Remember, you can't compare 12 and 12 to 24. He wanted to learn for 24 years straight, not 12 years, another 12 years. Every time we take a break from learning, there's a price to pay. Yeah? So he goes back for another 12 years, and at the end of the 24 years, he has 24,000 students. He is the elite, the leader of Israel. He comes into town with his students, And Rachel, of course, comes to see her husband after 24 years, and she can't get through the crowd. And he spots her, and he says, Rachel, Rachel. He says, Akiva, Rachel, Akiva, Rachel, Rachel, Akiva, Akiva. Yeah, and they finally come together, and it's a tearful reunion, and everybody's looking, except for the Talmidim, are like, ugh, pasnish. You know what I'm saying? What is this? What is this? Epis. Yeah, and he turns to the students, he says, whatever I have, whatever you have, is because of her. So they say, well, you get good money for hair. Yeah, says, that's not what I mean, you idiot. It's because she sent me off to learn. That's the reason that I'm, you know, I achieved greatness in Torah, and that's why you're my students. And so, he's now, let's see how old he is. He started off at 40, he's now 24 years later, he's 64 years old. And as the great Rabbi Akiva, the leader of Israel, is there, various people come to ask him questions, and there's this one old, sad man, whose name is Kalba Sivula. And he comes to seek the guidance of the great Rabbi Akiva. And he says, what is it? How can I help you? He says, Rabbi, I need to annul a vow. He says, oh, a vow is a very serious thing. What is your vow? He says, I vowed that I would have nothing to do with my daughter. Oh, that's very tragic, very tragic. Why'd you do that? Because my daughter, instead of marrying a Talmid Chacham, ran off and married an ignorant shepherd. Pretty serious. Yeah. What if you knew the ignorant shepherd would become a Torah scholar? What do you mean, a real one? Like me. He says, well, then of course I would have never made the vow. And it's annulled. Dad. What? It's me. I came out of regular Akiva. Careful reunion. Now Akiva's 64. He's got the girl. He's got the money. He's got the position. He's got the Talmidim. Oh, it just don't get better than that. 70, 80, 90, 100. Yeah, he's getting on in years. You know, and everything's good. And his Talmidim are the Talmidim of the world. They're holding positions all over the place. They have everything. And then all of a sudden, in a 33-day period, they all die. That's over 700 a day. Now, I hope you appreciate what this means, because the only thing that was in writing at this point was the Bible, the Tanakh. There were no Mishnah. There was no Gemara. There was no Shulchan Aruch. There was no art school sitter. Nothing. I know, it's hard to believe. Hard to believe. Nothing. The repository of the oral law lay with these students at 700 a day. Could you imagine the devastation of Klal Yisrael? Could you imagine Rabbi Akiva? He's running from sickbed to sickbed, from funeral to funeral, going and going and going. And finally comes Lag BaOmer, and his life's work is in ashes. It's all destroyed. There's nothing left.
Is that where he burned things? That was in ashes?
We'll see.
Well, in that, it was, I'm sure, where I highlighted the last one. And then there
was... Where? That's it. He's done. Now he's an old man. And everything he had, he gave to these Talmidim. You know, a Rebbe takes it very seriously. I was in Rabbi Weinbach's office. I don't know if he wants me to tell this story. Probably not. Anyway, somebody calls out of the blue. Someone told me to call you on. And he says, who are you? And why should I talk to you? He says, well, I have an issue. I don't want to mention my name. He says, listen, it's nothing personal. He says, I don't have that much time, and I've got to give it to my Talmidim. I've got a lot of Talmidim here in Eretz Yisrael who want to speak to me. He says, I'm sorry, nothing personal. I told Rav Moshe Shapiro, and I'm one of thousands of Talmidim, and not a particularly important one. Trust me. If you don't believe me, you can ask any other Talmidim. They'll vouch for it. And I told him I have to speak to him. I said that, and he thinks, and he says, I'm meeting with people tomorrow at 11, you know, I finish about 11:10 at night. Just come to the yeshiva, you'll drive me back. I come there, he didn't get out till 11:30. Drove him back, he spoke to him after 12. You know, well, he davens v'sikin in the morning, and he doesn't do much sleeping in between. Talmud says he needs. Rabbi Akiva put his whole life into these Talmidim, and he watched everything vanish before his eyes. So what do you do? I saw a bumper sticker once. If at first you don't succeed, quit. Rabbi Akiva says, I'm an old man. I had a rough life. Finished. I made my contribution, and that's it. Let somebody else take it. I'm done. Nope. Rabbi Akiva searched around, and he found 5 more students who were worthy. Maybe not on the level of his 24,000. No, not on the level of the 24,000 he lost. 5 more. And he started over again with them. Teaching, Mishnayos, Gemara. how to learn, how to think, student by student, step by step. And because of those five students, Torah continued in Israel. And of one of those students, his name was Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Rav Shimon bar Yochai, who had a fraction of the Torah of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was also into the mystic stuff, make no mistake about it. It says that he did not explain, not only did he explain every word and every letter, he explained the crowns on top of the letters, things that we have no connection to in this world. He understood everything. And in Pirkei Avos it says that Shimon bar Yochai sifted through the words of his Rebbe 13 times. What does that mean? Till he got down the stuff that he was able to have any connection to. That's how distant he was. And Shimon bar Yochai wanted to bring down this hidden light of the Zohar, of the Torah. And it's now the day of his death. You know, if there's one time in your life when you think you're entitled to spend it for yourself, it's the day of your death. It's safer here by Shimon Schwab. So he had a brother, Moshe Schwab. Meir Schwab. What?
He
wouldn't have lived in Lakewood.
Probably says it.
So then it was Meir Schwab. Anyway, his brother was an unusual sort of a fellow. When Shimon Schwab took his brother to see the Chafetz Chaim, so the Rebbe said, "I'll be with you soon." So when he came out, he said, "Who are you learning with?" Chafetz Chaim looks at him and says, "You saw me learning with somebody?" He says, "Yeah." So he turns to his brother, Shimon Schwab. He says, "Did you see anybody?" He says, "No." He says, "Who'd you see?" He says, "I don't know. An old man with a white beard, you know." So he turns to Shimon and he says, "You better watch that brother of yours. He's a little young to be seeing Eliyahu HaNavi." Anyway, I heard this story from my wife's uncle in Lakewood, Moni Klughaupt, who said there was a guy in Lakewood who wanted to meet with him. So he says, "When can you come?" And he went through his schedule and he says, "Monday night." "Monday night." He says, "Okay. But whatever it is, we have to be done by 8 o'clock. So I can't meet with you past 8 o'clock. He says, "Okay, 7 o'clock?" He says, "7 o'clock, but it's got to be done by 8. It's fine. Anyway, I ended up canceling the appointment. And the next day, Tuesday morning, he sees on the board in the yeshiva that Meir Schwab died last night at 8 o'clock. How he knew that, I don't know. Probably it's related to the fact that he could see Eliyahu HaNavi. But he knew, this is my last hour in life. You want the time? It's yours. And we saw Salanta, the founder of the Muslim movement, was on his deathbed. And he spends his last moments in life in a small town where nobody knew him. And they appointed someone to watch his body. And as he's dying, he spends his last strength reassuring the fellow not to be afraid that he's alone with a dead body and what a big mitzvah he's doing. And thus he died. Now Shimon bar Yochai is on the last day of his life, and you know what? He doesn't give up. He works. And he works, and as he dies, he brings down this light, this mystical light. I have to tell you, we build all these bonfires for the mystical light. It doesn't really capture it. Somebody told me they went by the Hasidim, and the Hasidim have this big vat, metal vat, filled with olive oil, and hundreds of floating wicks, all lit. I would like to see that. The light that's given off, that pure, clear light is probably what it was. But there's an advantage to bonfires, and that is the next morning, as you pointed out, it's all covered in ash. Because unlike Ba'omer, what we learned from Rabbi Akiva and from Shimon bar Yochai is there's no such a thing as giving up. There's no such a thing as giving up. It means that my whole life's work could be in ashes, and I pick myself up, brush myself off, and start all over again. It means I can be on my deathbed and I don't give up. Where there's life, there's hope. And it's probably good that it comes out on the 33rd day of the Yomer, because it means most of it's over. So 35 is 5 weeks, right? So it's like almost over. There's 2.5 weeks left of the 7 weeks. So people say, all right, I didn't really use the time. I didn't take advantage. I didn't really, next year. I had somebody in Elul It was the ninth of Elul. They said, well, I blew this Elul. I guess I'll start again next year. I said, there's 21 days left. Yeah, but, you know, I didn't really get into this Gemara. I don't really know this Mishnah too well. I'll wait till the next one. It's too late for me. My life is set. Rabbi Kiva didn't feel that way. He's 40 years old. Picked himself up and started at the bottom, worked his way up. He lost everything. He picked himself up. The light that is revealed on Lag BaOmer is that through the ashes grow the roses of success. You can lose everything and you brush yourself off and start over again. I have met people who were in the Holocaust who lost their whole family, lost their money, lost everything, and they come to America or to Israel without a penny in their pocket and they rebuild their lives. They get married again, they have children again. They don't give up. And on Lag BaOmer, as we're climbing up to the Torah, you should know you're going to slip, you're going to fall, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to gain levels and lose them. You're going to make achievements and see your achievements disappear. And you're going to brush yourself off and you're going to keep going. Sheva tipol tzaddik. Seven times a tzaddik falls. And he picks himself up and keeps going. As long as there's a breath of life left in you, you can do something. You can accomplish, you can change. That, I believe, is the message of Lag BaOmer. And this Motzi Shabbos, this Sunday, as we, there won't be shiur on Sunday as we mentioned, as we celebrate Lag BaOmer and we tap into this energy, this light that's released. The light was released on this day because this is a day where you never give up. It is the beginning of the last 17 days of the Omer. 17 is the numerical value of Tov, of good. And it was night. Erev is a big mixture. And it was Boker. There was order. And God saw it was good. Now we take all of the problems, all of the difficulties, all of the strivings, and we pick ourselves up and we say, now we're going to go. Take that energy, move and grow and fly. We're going to end this Sirsa Aima on a very high level. We're going to go in and have a beautiful Shavuos where we're going to acquire tremendous levels. Okay, my friends. Have a good Shabbos.